Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
How does the alien mind work? Well, we have a mysterious fellow on the line from California who says he knows how. In fact, he wrote an e-book about it. George L. That's how we're going to refer to you. Is that okay, George?
Yes, that's fine.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, right off the bat, I think we need to talk about that. How does the alien mind work?
Well, it's a good question. There's obviously a difference between the way what we've seen in experiencers and contactees and officials who reported about their interactions with aliens. There's a big difference between the way we behave and we think and the way that we think about aliens as opposed to the way that they seem to think. What are their assumptions? How do they think about us? How do they think about the universe? The biggest example, how do they think about science? Their idea of science is just very starkly different from ours. It's not so concrete in a sense, it seems, although they are physical, biological beings.
Let's stop here just for a second. And your e-book, I guess, is this a piece of fiction, or is it an overview of what you found through, I assume, some research?
It's not fiction whatsoever. I, as cleanly as I can, simply as reporting. I've worked as a writer and investigative researcher. I did graduate study in U.S. history, the underside of U.S. history. And I approach the subject trying to report as closely, as accurately as I can, both in the experiences that I've had, other people's experiences, and I try to use the best sources to come up with a good overview.
We'll get into that in a minute, but you said something that caught my ears immediately, made them perk up a little bit, and that was your own experiences. I assume you've had some UFO or ET experiences yourself?
Yeah, you know, I previously, prior to 1995, I had been a skeptic myself, but in 1995, I had I guess what you'd call a contact, and it began, it developed, and it became very dynamic. It took me a while to get used to the interaction and to get up to speed, I guess, on what you'd call is basically alien telepathy. You know, when I say alien telepathy, the basic standard is something like human telepathy. And I should mention something. Some people wonder, well, is human telepathy possible? Does it exist? There have been studies that show, yes, that there's pretty good evidence that it does exist. And I'll give you an example why it is possible. The brain has frequencies within the brain communicating between different cells and parts of the brain, and the frequencies from about 5 hertz to 30 hertz. From 5 to 11 hertz is what is called extremely low frequency waveform. Those ELFs, as they're called, abbreviated, can penetrate solid objects. So, just upon that alone, we have a basis for easy telepathy. That's the more resting state of the mind, as, for example, Russell Targ, who taught people during the Cold War to do what's called remote viewing, says, your mind has to be kind of relaxed. It has to be something like a black slate or like a pool of dark, still water, just black, in order to be in those resting states where you're doing that. Targ was working on remote viewing, remote sensing from a distance. But in telepathy, there's a similar need for resting kind of state. An agitated state doesn't do it. That's just using light, or what we call electromagnetism alone, the brain waves. There may be more in the new physics that allows what some people are hinting at, what, for example, Stephen Greer talks about, a nearly instantaneous kind of telepathy, where people or aliens can communicate based upon a new kind of physics that's almost instantaneous over distances that would seem to defy the speed of light.
When we talk about you personally, and I want to do that first before we get into the overall thing about how you developed the theme about how aliens think, and even before I do that, I have to ask you right off the top of my head, there are more than one species of aliens, right?
Yes, obviously.
Yeah, so do they all think differently, or they think alike?
Very good question. It seems that they have some basic assumptions, it would seem, based upon what abductees, what researchers, what people who've reported having had experiences, and whistleblowers from formerly from the U.S. government, some apparently actively within the U.S. government, have said aliens have a similar kind of, I guess you could say, awareness of the universe, some basics, but there are different categories of advancement of aliens. Some aliens are more close to us, for example, the more commonly known, quote, gray alien, the one with those almond-shaped eyes and the big head and the kind of relatively small body. Those kind of aliens, apparently, are closer on the evolutionary scale or the technological advancement scale to us than are some more advanced aliens. So there are differences, first off, in that regard. Second off, some aliens appear to live in very large communities. They may be called collectives. Some may think of themselves as trading collectives. They're kind of like aggregates, and they may involve hundreds, if not thousands, of planets. Scale, sometimes widely dispersed, relatively far from each other. And so those kind of aliens have a different kind of assumption. It's more within their thinking, thought of their community. They try to make it seem as though it's the oneness of the whole universal mind, but that's kind of pretentious, I guess, for anyone to assume that they're more or less premised on the singular oneness of the whole universal mind. It's possible in some parts. But there are other groups that are independent groups of aliens, smaller groups of aliens, which would interact more in a different way. For example, the large group of aliens, like those that are reportedly connected with the so-called grays and what abductees report to be the abducting alignment of aliens, those kind of aliens it's a tighter kind of collective, or it's larger organized group mentality, and they may tend to seem more controlling. The idea of the breeding program, people being abducted kind of knocked out, they're not supposed to know too much. Aliens that I've interacted with are critical of those particular aliens, because those particular aliens aren't even from our own nearby neighborhood vicinity, reportedly. And so there's kind of a more independent mentality among some aliens, and smaller groups may have a good critique. Even some larger groups may be more advanced and have a good critique, because that kind of direct intervention, or what appears to be a direct kind of intervention, is considered not the best way to approach other groups. It could cause problems, contention, could cause a reaction, maybe a militarization here by a certain regime or another.
Now, when we talk about that, the reactions, I want to get into that in a little bit to end the show, but you mentioned the things that you're familiar with by personal contact. So let's get to that. You're abducted, and then later you kind of qualified that and said, well, I've been having contact.
Okay, well, I'm not actually, as far as I'm consciously aware, I'm not an abductee, but I have had contact since 1995. And I would characterize it, too, in a typical person's thought.
You have investigated a lot of people, or talked to a lot of people who say they have been abducted, is that right?
Oh, yes. I've been actively involved investigating, talking to people, going to some conventions, reading, researching, this is a kind of subject that when it enters into your life, let's say if your life had previously been one way, suddenly if you're interacting with aliens and new possibilities enter into your life, and you see that the old assumptions here are simply not the limit. I'll give you an example that, well, back 15, 20 years ago, aliens may have seemed a relatively strange or odd topic. Now, nearly majority of people in polls say they're pretty sure their government's hiding facts about real, live aliens. We're talking about many, many millions of people in the United States alone, let alone the world. I've read that 50% of the people in China say that they think that there are aliens, and in one poll, I don't know who did it and how it was done, the aliens exist, and they're open to that. I guess Eastern religions have been open, or previously were open, to the subject to begin with, more so than the Western reductive viewpoint. So we tend to try, or our historical approach has been to try to say, well, prove that aliens exist. If you don't have physical concrete proof, then I'm not going to believe a word of it. Well, that's not the case with the majority of the public now. People are introduced to stuff. So when it comes into your life, it changes the way you think and feel. And so since 1995, in my case, I've been researching, wanting to know more. I've thought through, I've had to expand my consideration. I have been challenged by aliens to develop my thought, not led point by point, but challenged in a sense to become more thoughtful, more advanced in my thinking. That seems to be a characteristic of interaction with aliens, is that if you're interacting with a group of aliens who don't want you to know too much, then they may not challenge you that much. They may try to tell you that this is the way it is, please don't cause any trouble, we don't want to get into that. In my case, it's quite the contrary. It seems that my interactions have been part of a new sort of prong, I guess you could say, in a sense, to get humans up to speed, and that's what my book is about. Now, the book is on a website, it's called iPod, E-Y-E-P-O-D. It has other subjects also. And that's what I'm trying to do, is to develop, now that we're long past first contact, now that people seem pretty convinced that something is definitely going on, now that we see that huge amounts of money go into government programs that have no outward accountability, and it's not just that, we have hundreds of direct sources, people stepping out, admirals, generals, people in the Roswell case, people who work in Eisenhower's White House, people, witnesses to this all over the map, coming out publicly and not worrying even about their pensions being cut off because they broke their security oath. And suddenly, the subject has become very hot, and it's much more, I guess you could say, it's acceptable to the mainstream. People sometimes wonder, when's it going to become publicly disclosed? Well, it looks like it's being publicly disclosed. And we seem to be able to make more that decision more than actually someone in government who seems to be kind of hamstrung.
When we talk about your contacts, always the same group?
No. In my case, began with one group. And immediately after, it was a group independent. It's called The Elders. A man named Alec Newell from New Zealand wrote a book about them. But the contact with them was apparently ghosted by an increasingly involved another and older, I guess you could say, a much more advanced group. When humans begin, or I guess when a planet like ours begins to interact with aliens, it is multifaceted. It's not just one group. It may seem there's one group, but the interactions that are, I suppose, that are becoming dynamic or that have a potential to help in the process have multiple sort of awareness or multiple groups paying attention to it, and actually sometimes it seems like the more advanced ones, it's almost as if they control it because they're so very smart. But after initiating contact with them, the gray aliens, I guess you could call their alignment, since it's a large group, tried to preempt it in my case. They tried to sort of steer it in their direction, and I think they were trying to get me to moderate because I'm an investigative researcher. I report what is the truth, and I try to get the information out, and I was being kind of led to moderate, not say too much about technology or about the weirdness of the new physics, which is very important in understanding aliens. The weirdness of the new, you could call it like post-quantum physics, or this new stuff called negative energy. It seems to have a possibility for fast and light kind of, or let's just say very unusual new physics. That kind of thing was happening, and that particular group of aliens was not too happy with that kind of information getting out. My assumption is they thought that way because we might become too competent, too capable of probing them, understanding them, and beginning to actually educate other humans to where the subject of aliens would not have the total ridicule factor, but would seem very logical, very continuous with the new physics, the reports that are going around. And for some reason, that second group of aliens, the gray abducting alignment, did not want that to advance faster than it seems they wanted to have a handle on.
When we come back, we're going to explore a little bit more about the alien mind. We just kind of touched on it as we come to the break here. George L., don't go away. I want to talk a little bit more about the different species and how they treated you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is Jerry Pippin. You're listening to the UFO Files.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. Uniquely authored from beyond the grave and co-authored in this world, the book chronicles the miraculous journey of communication beyond death. Learn more about the book, My Search for the Afterlife. Visit their website at www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.
Sometimes people talk about ETs and they think of ETs as very superior and humans as more like somebody in a zoo. We have George L. on the line, who has made it a career, really, to check and research and postulate about the alien mind. In fact, he's written an e-book about it, and you can get that at iPod.org. George L., let's talk a little bit about that. When did you figure out these, for lack of a better term, I don't know that I call them these fellows, because I guess there is a male and female, right?
You know, other people who've had interactions with aliens have noted that even abductees, when they can't see a physiological difference between a male and a female alien, they somehow seem to know the difference. And it has to do with the tenor, the more tender, maybe the slightly more gentle aspect of the female alien.
So what you're saying there, even with the alien mind, that difference between the macho and the feminine exists.
Yeah, it does seem to hold. You do see differences in personality.
You don't think that's the human transposing some sort of feeling toward it? You believe it's real?
I suppose initially you would wonder, would that be that way? For example, what about the aliens who adapted to cloning, the non-sexual kind of reproduction, where that difference between male and female is not actually so important in terms of their reproduction and their continuation of their population? Even then, there appears to be a kind of a character continuation. My assumption is this. They get advanced. Maybe some decide to do cloning. But, for example, as has been seen in the Gray case, the Grays have become weakened because through cloning, it's a monoculture of genetics. They don't have the old diversity of genes to draw on. And when they become frail or have a malady or an illness that develops, they don't have so much resistance to them. Where a more advanced population would probably do cloning to improve themselves, make themselves, their brains larger, disease resistance, but would also preserve some sexual reproduction among the population or their ability to do so. So in cases of very advanced aliens, it seems we are seeing what is a male and then a female character, and they do behave differently. The males seem to be a little bit more manipulative. It's not solely a human characteristic.
They do they have attractions for each other? I mean, do they play around?
Well, you know, I've never seen, I suppose, in a sense, been treated to a lot of discussion.
I mean, like, do they kiss each other on the cheek or something?
You know, I think it might be touching, but I wouldn't know. I haven't really observed that kind of interaction.
I mean, because that seems to be very important, or at least it is to me.
You know, especially if it wasn't a sexually reproducing population, I would assume there are. It's probably something like that. I don't know why not. Tenderness and affection would probably be something similar.
I mean, I would think you'd still want the touch and the feel.
Yeah, I think...
I know the human mind would, but we're talking about the alien mind. Maybe they passed that.
Yeah, well, if it's not a sexually reproducing population, I would still think that there would be touching.
Well, sure.
Tenderness, closeness. You know, the ability to confide, or at least...
I mean, you don't have to read too many romantic novels or go to too many movies to know that intimacy is more than just having sex.
But what we do see, though, is apparently many aliens, even the closest to us on the scale of technological difference, they have a different sense of what is, quote, personal, as opposed to what they think is the normal sort of interaction. Humans, we tend to think, I personally enjoy this, or it's personal to me, it feels that way to me. Where in an alien community, it's more, I suppose the thinking is more about the social community, and even it gets into how they feel about the community of mind, of not just their own population, but more advanced populations. Because aliens, is one thing you've noticed in aliens very quickly when you interact with them, is that they are both very intelligent, thoughtful, and I guess you could say very scientific, but they very much appreciate that when they see it in other aliens. And when very much more advanced aliens come along into the mix, as has happened in my case, and I'm sure in other people's cases, take the case of Philip Kropp, who's the former L.A. Times Pulitzer Prize winning editor.
Yeah, I've had him on the air before. Is he still around? Is he still alive?
Yeah, I think he is. I saw him about 2 years ago, and he was going, he was hopping, he looked pretty alive and vital. In his case, he talked about, well, there were the gray aliens or that level of aliens, but there were a more advanced group called the Vert, who seemed to be much more numerous from a completely different galaxy group 14 million light years away, and they were more advanced. And what you find is the more advanced aliens, when they sometimes enter in, even more advanced than the Verdants that Kropp talks about, the aliens that may be billions of years more advanced, when they say something, or let's say when they communicate something, in telepathic terms, it's the imagery, it's the graphics, it's the idea. It's kind of like the mathematical geometry of how the ideas all...
So in other words, they communicate in a multimedia type idea.
Subtle, very subtle, kind of a faded quality to it. I think in order to project it, it's like what I was talking about in telepathy. You have to have a more resting state in order for that projection to occur, just based upon life, let alone the more advanced physics. In order to get it across, it's a little bit softer, and I think subtlety is also appreciated because this blaring sort of, you know, vividly bright sort of flashing kind of quality in some people's thinking is not good for, let's say you have many different aliens interacting at one time, all aware of or interacting surrounding the same idea or person or persons. Now, blaring sort of loud noise does not help for that larger community of interaction. And so that's how these unusually more advanced aliens will say something that, let's say, the slightly less advanced aliens will just be wowed by also. I think they admire, they try to learn by, and you'll see that happening. Hyper-advanced aliens come into the mix and say something, and it's just sometimes astounding.
Now, George, the human race has so many frailties, and one of it is, in my opinion, we were kind of territorial. We like to take care of our turf. And you watch a bunch of humans and somebody comes in that's a little superior to them, you get one of two reactions. You do get the awe sometimes of people who are comfortable with themselves, but most people kind of want to protect their own ideas. I'm talking about jealousy over turf and over ideas and what you're doing. Does that happen with the alien mind?
Yes, but it's different. It's much more subtle. In the human case, you may get loudness, anger, sometimes even loud arguments, and people who will try to pretend that they're more, I guess, more like the king-like or controlling sort of, you know, that kind of role. But among aliens, there's an attempt to step back, first off, allowing for a larger interaction or a larger awareness. But their way sometimes is to steer, or sometimes it's like a psychological or a minded of manipulativeness to try to think ahead of you, think behind you, cover all the bases sometimes, knowing that you're going to make the next sort of move in what you say or communicate. And their kind of contentiousness sometimes is more simply trying to steer, or I guess you could say control the process. Because as you talk about aliens, you're talking about increasingly larger and larger interactions. Now imagine, say, humans live on one planet, but 50,000, maybe 10,000, maybe a million years from now, there are many different planets. Some of those planets will have different cultures, and they'll be slightly different, and they will have different interactions. But the larger controlling human, whatever the authority is, or even if we're part of another authority, at that time, will try to keep its control or keep its influence stronger.
That's what I was getting at. I mean, that's one of the reasons things like the UN have so many problems, in my opinion. Everybody looks out for themselves.
But we have a weak UN. If we had a UN, if we simply had the World Court where the law was binding and it wasn't necessarily moving in to take over your voting or your national rights, but just the laws that you could punish these people for committing certain crimes, then we'd have a stronger UN that's just like, it'd be more a planet like a village. Well, among aliens, there's one problem that enters into this, is that the practice of abductions, of some aliens having vastly more, or let's say very significantly more advanced technology than other aliens, when that comes into the equation, it's almost as though the lesser aliens may just assume, if they're part of the same alignment or the same grouping, that these aliens have the authority, not the authority, that they outrank, or not. It's not so much like a military rank, it's seniority, experience, it's their technology, their capacities. They can do so much, these lesser aliens can't quite do as much. And so you see control in that way. Another method of control among aliens when there is contention is what is called psychotronics. Psychotronics is a technology that we are just beginning to develop, and certainly in black budget labs there seems to be quite a bit of it, but it seems very crude. It's mind control technology where, say, a pilot could guide a plane, but more than that, you could guide a computer, you could guide a craft just with an alien technology from here to there almost instantly. It follows the impulses of your brain, and it could use some of the new alien physics, I guess you could call them, that are a little bit, they're marginally faster than light, in a sense. But the problem with that technology is that if you can control technology with your mind, that technology can also read your mind. So in an alien society that has that technology, there's an assumption that what you're thinking, what you're communicating in the telepathic and the other interactions. By the way, telepathy communicates more information, so they tend to prefer that. Obviously, all abductees say that. All the experiences I've heard about pretty much suggest that. You don't hear much about aliens using their mouths so much because it's very inefficient. But when you can monitor the thoughts of so many different people in a population, it brings in a different factor. This kind of a, do you venture? Do you criticize? Can you step outside the bounds of your government and say, well, you know, we're wrong. We shouldn't be abducting over here. We shouldn't have a kind of a breeding program trying to put people in the lineup, say, on a given planet and confound, manipulate, or thwart them in some way, because we could cause problems for them that, if we were honest and set back, that they might not have had we not intervened like that. So the question of intervention is important. There are a lot of controls that are almost, they're unwritten, and they're just accepted. And it's very different, I would assume, from one alien group to another. For example, if we find that the nearest planet to us, let's say it could be something like the planet Iarga, there's a man named Stephen Denier. You may have heard the story about that one, 10 light years away. A relatively close group that it's a very plausible seeming account, the story. If that was the group that's closest to us, and only 10 light years away, it's one planet with seemingly that limitation. They would be less controlling, I would assume. Might be more cautious and careful about their approach to us, a little bit worried about how and what they should do to influence us, but they wouldn't necessarily be moving in to try to just take over our environments. And
it seems to me you're talking about one of the human traits that's rampant here is not in the ET society. Maybe I'm misunderstanding, and that is individuality.
Yeah, well, individuality is...
I mean, we prize that in our society, I think.
We do, because we have a very good attention to individual rights, and that's a big question. What do alien societies, what do they guarantee of individual rights? And I've seen, based upon the expression of certain aliens, is that some aliens, I guess you could say, well, let's take the case again of the Greys. They reportedly, according to many accounts, their planet failed, or it died to a technological mishap, or in a misuse of technology, during what looks like it may have been a kind of intervention similar to what the Greys seem to be doing here with abductions, breeding, and so forth, and maybe some attempts to manipulate events in their favor. But the Greys planet failed, and it was rendered uninhabitable, a misuse of technology on a global scale, which is not quite the kind of things that we're using on a big scale right now, yet. And after that, they're much more vulnerable. So they had no planet. They had to pretty much accept the terms of this larger grouping that they became a part of and somehow just bail out and find other places to be. But they're under the wing of a larger group. So their idea of individual rights are going to be starkly different from what our idea of individual rights are. Here we are. We have this beautiful, this a gem of a planet, biologically diverse water. It has one moon, has an excellent sun. We're not going to be running out of a good sun unless we totally goof up in the future. And so we're envied but we also have a stability. We have kind of options and alternatives that they may not have. So we're probably able to develop individual rights if we don't goof up too much in terms of the ecology, which would cause a loss of individual rights probably in a dramatic way in the future, more so than some aliens would be able to do. But what I've noticed is that some of the most advanced aliens have a very fine, a very detailed, and a very specific awareness of individual rights, legal procedures, how you would redress, how you would argue a case between two totally different groups, the universal ecology, the whole group interaction. But it's a long, long tradition with them. And they seem to want to help develop that here and preserve it here.
It seems in many ways that they may look upon us as barbarians.
In some ways, but I think, I think what they may look at is, well, it's like, say, we look at a teenager. The teenager comes along kind of crude.
And he's going to push the limits. I understand what you're saying.
When that teenager develops, you see potential. I think they look at the potential in us.
Good point.
How far they can move you in a certain period of time. Then they're really looking at that character. Once you're aware, let's say most people are not aware. Aliens, telepathy, your thoughts can be known. But once those are known, does that cause a change in your thinking? And when you're more like them, then how do you act then? That's your real nature. That's your character. That I suppose the human character shows up in that kind of situation.
We're talking with George L. We'll be right back. We're talking about the alien mind. Far, far different than ours in many ways, right, George?
Many ways.
In other ways, I guess, imagine they're similar. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light, to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635, for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
We've been talking about the AMI in the last 30 minutes with George L. here, and we'll get into more of this of why you're so confident, and I can tell the confidence is oozing through the phone here in our conversation. You just know you have the AMI figured out, don't you?
Well, I suppose what you see as confidence is having had years of experience and still ongoing, I can speak from that experience, and I know exactly what I've observed and what other people have reported, and what appear to be what I would judge the best reports. But I don't want to assume that I know it all, because as soon as you think you know it all, then you begin to prove just how little you actually.
Well, I want to get to this. You mentioned Phil Klass earlier. We've had him on. He had some very interesting experiences, and you said yours were close to that, right?
Phil Kropp was actually taken for two or three days the first time.
Yeah, I misspoke. I'm sorry about that.
A year or two later, and he was actually on there physically on a craft, and he vividly reported it was a kind of a near-perfect recall. I've had experiences. I haven't been.
Have you been on a craft?
I have not. Not to my recollection, I haven't been on a craft. I've certainly been remotely, kind of probing, checking, and aware of details of craft. And, some of that's not too much encouraged when you're interacting with aliens to be kind of snooping on them. I suppose, in a sense, if you're just in not trying to copy or trying to steal their ideas. Actually, humans wouldn't usually understand the ideas of what's going on in a craft. The first thing you would notice is that it's very different. No corners in the rooms. They're rounded. The energy sort of configurations are kind of Tesla-like. Bob Lazar used to talk about non-wireless. They don't have wires. They have an energy that just goes through the continuum without that, for the most part. Not always. And some of the devices would seem to have wires. And you notice that there are very high energy fields around the exterior of the craft. There's energy, or what a man named Tom Bearden calls electrogravity, streaming away from their craft. It's very different from, let's say if you're doing what's called remote viewing or remote sensing, which any person can do once they've gotten up to speed on it. And you were sort of placing your perspective, as Stephen Greer talks about in his new book, outside, actually sort of monitoring one of their craft. What you would see, you would feel actually, because you're connected to that space-time around it, is high energy streaming surrounding it and shooting off from it in from according to their network, to other craft, to their installations, even towards their distant locations where they live. But that technology and that electrogravity, or whatever you want to call it, their energy has information content because of psychotronics. And believe it or not, a human, after some experience, can begin to pick up on that much more than most people might think. So that when you see or when you're around an alien craft, or let's say you're probing remotely, kind of investigating them, you can pick up basic ideas about just how it seems to be configured. Actually, you could begin to probe very specific details inside of it. I'm not saying that you could just know everything about all those details, because that's like saying to a person in junior high school, well, you could know how to build one of these, you know, brand new computers. They couldn't do it. They don't have the specific training of each individual device. The material science.
When we talk about the alien mind, greed and competition, that's pretty prevalent in the human mind. Does that exist there with these ETs? Greed? I mean, what? Is money important to them?
Well, you know, I don't think they have money. As far as I know, I don't think aliens have currency.
How did they get a society without money? If you look back through the history of Earth,
to begin with. Yeah, we've always had currency, and we think that is the standard. But that's one of our assumptions, because it's always been that way. Once we have a more, let's say, a more tightly integrated legal, and once we have an economy that's based upon resources, as opposed to invented numbers, which is what our currency is, and it gets too much in one place, too little in another place, the army from the wrong place rolls over, takes from another place, there's no control. Once we have a whole systems kind of ecology of our economy, our resources, then that will be our economy, is our resources and the energy. Aliens appear to base their, I guess you could say, their resource apportionment, or their, you could call it an economy, on energy and on what resources they have, and also it's a longer-term projection in many cases. They have to think about, how long is this planet going to last? How do we... And I don't think there is materialistic... as acquisitive as we are, but there's one qualifier to that.
Are they vain?
You know, I don't see vanity in the way that our human vanity tends to revolve around mating displays and people trying to take too much. Alien vanity would seem to be about knowing so much more than most other aliens. And what you would think would be vanity is just an ability, or sometimes an attempt to jump into something and assert something, would seem vain from that given alien.
Yeah, well, we have that too in human terms. If you hang around a bunch of PhDs and you watch them, you'll notice after a while it's always one-upmanship on who knows the most.
Well, you know, what you do see among aliens is this, and what I've interacted and noticed quite a bit, is that, and it's particularly when you begin to study them, because now we're long past just whether or not they exist. We need more detailed study to the exopolitics, to the how they think, and the universal dynamics of it. You see that a larger grouping of aliens may not be individually greedy. They may not want to have gold and say three alien girlfriends, you know, and the biggest room. But as a collective, they may be very acquisitive because of the politics of the different alien populations in that grouping. One larger, more capable, more controlling. They want more resources, more control. They may want expansion and an ability to have their technology communicating across larger networks and drawing on the energy from those stars and those parts of those galaxies, because some alien groupings are literally more closer to a galactic scale, and some interacting across galaxies. And so their idea of greed would have to do with assuming, well, they know more than you do. They're much more competent than you are. They've been through all the little, what seems a stupid, let's say, vicious cycles that we're doing right now, and they have ideas about exactly how to either solve those or manipulate them to their advantage, and how to resolve it so that they look good. And so they may just think, well, okay, so we're going to do that. There's no one else around. we're the most advanced right here in this vicinity. Who else is here? So it's up to us to do that. And that's kind of a problem. It's not greed, but it can be very troublesome. If you look at it from our perspective, individual rights, we're the sovereign people of this planet. It's the human politics is no longer, and will never be, one single planet's politics. We may have shadow plays, and we may have a lot of talk and a lot of pomp that makes it seem that way, but literally, and right now, in the major government, I would say the major governments, the more technologically capable, the more further-reaching governments, they're already aware of interplanetary politics and debating the dilemma. It will never be about one more planet, one single planet alone. It's far beyond that and will forever be that way.
Interplanetary politics gets my mind turning. I mean, what are we talking about here if we're not talking about the control of assets, control of dogma, control of reality? I mean,
there's one kind of one. The first problem that comes up.
I mean, see, the problem I have here is that I take it. It's logical that the A in mine might be different in a thought process than ours, but I'm not so sure that just because I'm humanizing them, that that's really a false way to look at it. And in other words, why are they here? If it's not to conquer or not to help, I mean, otherwise, are they just in for a cheap thrill, a nice vacation?
Yeah, there is that vacation aspect, I suppose, in some people. It's kind of a career thing to develop, to have been there, to have worked on this, to be advancing careers within their kind of government structure, which is probably not little, very little like ours, more of like, I don't know if you'd want to call it communist, but it is.
Well, I thought of that immediately.
They don't have capitalism, I don't think. Like, they don't have the money sort of thing, the super rich.
But, and the problem with communism here on Earth was that the human greed, the same greed that drives capitalism, was driving the communists.
Well, you know, imagine a larger interaction where various alien worlds are already developed, where they have shared larger systems. They would need to have subdivisions in there to have a check on one of those being totally wrong. You couldn't have, like if you had a Joseph Stalin versus a Mao only, or just a Mao for the whole world, then where would be the check? Who would pay attention to the legal rights, the human rights in that kind of situation? Obviously, aliens have paid a lot of attention to that. And within their type of government, new forms, social forms, new guarantees, processes, checks, and also this total, I don't want to say total awareness, but a deeper awareness is in what they do. They can check on quite a bit more than we can with what they have.
Are you saying that the A in mind, as far as you've been able to determine through your contacts and research, that there's no evil?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I would say, I wouldn't call it evil. I would say that we have to be careful not to be too naive. I see a problem that some people...
I mean, I just assume that some of those extraterrestrials probably desire human blood, protein, whatever.
Yeah, but I
mean, I just don't think... let's talk about food. How do they survive without food?
Some aliens, for example, as this book by Alec Newell talks about aliens who seem to be able to take the energy directly into their bodies. What they do need to do is they with their technological system, they need to have liquid. It's kind of a vitamin or just a liquid because they're biological beings. But let's say scientists have found that at the level of our DNA, there's something called ATP, adenine triphosphate. And what makes it work when it burns the energy, or let's say does the energy for our living processes, it sort of spins a little rotor down there. It's kind of a chemical, sort of like a little rotor spinning. Well, if you had a technology that could just tweak that and spin it without having any, sugar in your body, without those free radicals or whatever it is causes you to age, and you could do it that way, it would be much more efficient. You could also take the waste out of the body and do things like that.
How do they do that?
Well, the same way that you could get the energy in, you could target that other part of their system.
I just spent a show with a man who's very intellectual and very intelligent, but he believes that the actual, the thing about ETs that they spend is not money, but energy. In other words, they're consuming energy.
Yeah, they seem to be consuming energy. Well, for them, there's a guy named Tom Dude. He talks about the new kind of physics of this new electrogravity.
Yeah, let's talk about the new kind of physics. You've alluded to it several times. I got to take a break. I'll be right back.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. A rare number theory is developed during Dennis Spaulding's quest. My Search for the Afterlife is a book that shares a theory believed to help his son and other spirits validate the messages they send across worlds. To learn more about this unique and moving book, visit their website at mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.
The new physics, I guess that's the only way extraterrestrials could be here. They're from far, far away, galaxies and other places that you're really beyond the distance of my humankind or kin, thinking about it anyway, George L. Tell me a little bit about the laws of physics as far as ETs are concerned.
Well, apparently it's not the laws as we think of them. What we considered, or in the early 20th century, considered to be the limits, let's say the Einstein limits, the speed of light, and the concrete ideas of the atom, are obviously not the assumptions of aliens. Various people, Bob Lazar, Tom Dearden, Greer, various people working in the government talk, alluded to it, and aliens have actually hinted to some people, actually to many abductees. Abductees will make startling statements, and they seem to have an almost intuitive awareness of how the new physics for aliens works. But we have something like that developing already. There's a new type of phenomena. It's called negative energy. Negative energy it's in everything. Negative energy pulls inward, like down through the nucleus of an atom. Gravity everywhere pulls downward. It sort of pulls inward. And there's also normal energy curves outward. But the two are somehow interrelated. They're like reciprocals of each other. One affects the other, and they seem to connect down or step down through the atom nucleus in a way that also shoots out into space-time in a way almost instantaneously. Well, scientists are doing experiments with this new so-called negative energy, and it's obviously different from what physics used to be. It's challenged the old assumption of Einstein's physics. Einstein predicted some of it himself. But some of it is very odd. The freezing light, they're causing it to stop and be contained. They're causing atoms, human scientists are taking atoms and they're all just merging into one atom at one time. They disappear into something kind of like a black hole. And then they seem to come back out again. And they're some even seemingly faster than light experiments using this similar kind of stuff. The negative energy seems to be produced when lasers and light is converge, it comes at itself from different directions, and it cancels out. So where does the energy go? Well, according to Tom Bearden, and also according to scientists in Scientific American, January 2000, it goes into a negative energy fluctuations, kind of fluctuations going on that make a lot of sense in terms of what's going on down in the nucleus, the new physics. And aliens seem to be focusing or directing, for example, Bob Lazar talked about focusing gravity to make a nearly instant jump across space-time by stretching empty space-time and suddenly just being in the other place because when you let go with your focused gravity, you're over there. And if Bearden talks about how this new kind of negative energy or electrogravity can slow time or speed time. It can change time. That wouldn't change you, put you in the past where your grandma was. What it does is it kind of makes time more elastic. In order to slightly step beyond the speed of light or the old Einstein physics, it has to borrow energy from the larger space-time continuum. So it slightly speeds time, for example, in that area. That's where the cost of the drain comes from in order to achieve that, apparently. I don't want to sound too sure of myself in all of this, but you'll see that the new physics are like that. And aliens clearly have systems that are along those lines, obviously more developed in some ways. But that negative energy idea is very important. One problem for us, though, is do we just stumble into it and try to use it in the wrong ways? For example, if we think people begin to think that aliens are all a threat, and that we need to have weapons to fight them off, then, you know, we could end up stumbling out trying to grab real estate, trying to take more weapons, and that would be a real problem.
Well, it seems to me, unfortunately, that's where much of our present government's headed.
Yeah, but there's a big check on that, and the check is, let's say, if a small island somewhere in the South Pacific, not even a nation, but just a small island, suddenly got their hands on some sort of proton beam or some sort of particle beam weapon, what would the countries surrounding it do? Well, you can just imagine. They would certainly influence the situation. And there's so many different categories of aliens that will affect us and will be able to either convince us or, let's say, steer us into ways that we have to reconcile with the peaceability, the reduced weapons. And, you know, you can't go out into the universe, I think, trying to just take...
So you don't think there's a bunch of bad boys out there anyplace?
They're like not the old boys out there with their weapons trying to just shoot anything that comes by and take it for whatever they can get. Although, we have to be honest, the big alien groupings may actually look at other alien groups and think, we need to get a specimen from this place. We need to know what's in their genes. We want to have influence or inputs, find out what's going on with them, monitor them, just all kinds of things. I mean, there are obviously a lot of interactions that just go on every day. They're considered the norm among aliens. And the question is, how intrusive would those interactions be? It involves the thinking, the politics, the larger ecology of the whole universe.
You know, we're about to run out of time. We've still got a little bit of time left, but where are we headed with this? I mean, where are the ETs headed with us? I mean, what's going on here? Why are they here?
Well, it's a good question. It seems that different ETs are here for different reasons. Some of them seem to be here to monitor us, to assure that we get up to speed, to not be a problem for other aliens. Some aliens are here for influence, it's seeming control, or it's almost the use of humankind. If aliens are abducting and have a breeding program, that group of aliens seems to want to not just borrow genes, but they would be possibly trying to control the agenda here. And it introduces problems for humans. And what are our choices? What freedoms do we have? Actually, in the book Alien Mind on iPod.org, my next chapters are going to be how-to chapters, how to actually fend for yourself, how it is to interact with aliens, and what it is you can do in certain situations to keep it more equal, because there are very subtle ways of aliens trying to manipulate humans. When you're involved in an interaction, there'll be ways to sort of dominate, control, and pretty much just establish the whole context. And
now your book is a continuing, it's episodic, right? I mean, you keep adding more chapters.
Yeah, it's 150 pages now, but I could write a whole book. I'm writing chapters right now, or at least one or a few, on how to do exactly that. It almost could be a whole book in itself, and maybe I should even, well, I could never do full justice to it now, but in the context of actually interacting with aliens, there's a lot to be considered, but it's very simple. There's some very simple sort of checks and things you can do. You need to check on them, in a sense. If they're checking on you, you need to check on them. The most important thing to do is to think about it.
Have the ETs, the aliens, you know, you hear about these treaties and things. Are they into treaties?
Yeah, I would think they are. But I have to say one thing. The larger the grouping, the less they may take a treaty at face value. Let's say if the Greys are part of a much larger grouping that involves trillions of aliens in different places. If we have a treaty with, say, some subgrouping, maybe even just a kind of a small enclave, humanoid sort of enclave, some sort of Nordic or some sort of, that may be attached to them. If we had a treaty with them, I cannot say that I would expect that the larger that larger group would respect that. They might think that it's just another peculiarity of us, a relatively primitive people at this time, something to sort of look at, talk about it, but is that going to dictate how they behave? I rather doubt it. You would have to act with the whole group and the larger group. I don't know how much they would honor that act.
You know, talking to you, Georgiel, it's kind of a mixed bag. On one hand, it's kind of placid, and they're doing the right thing, and time has taught them what's right and what's wrong. And then on the other hand, logic, at least the way I see logic, is that maybe what they think's right for us is not right for us at all. You get what I mean? In other words, are they trying to enforce some sort of communistic rule on us?
Well, you know, I would have to make a distinction, is that what we consider, quote, communism is probably not at all the way they would think about this. I don't mean...
I'm talking basically, I'm not talking about the Cold War indoctrination we've had. I'm talking about the idea that money's not important. I mean, you just said you hadn't seen a billfold on an ET.
Well, let's say yeah, there are probably obviously communistic. That's not the word to use. Among aliens.
Well, I mean, it's community. It's a member of the community. So
call it, say, egalitarian sort of communality.
Yeah.
Shared based upon the larger group, but there you would assume that they would have.
What do they do for entertainment? I mean, entertainment is built on the human terms of things that are not common. In other words, the rock and rollers all look a little strange, or we did at one time until we started emulating them.
Oh, I think they have art, music. They have...
You ever heard any of their music?
Well, I've been in situations where I'm a very musical person. I make up music in my head to accompany what I hear, and I try to take it in a different direction because I'm very sort of techno and kind of electronica, sort of trance-minded, and instruments that don't exist in a lot of things. So I start adding parts in my head. And then I'll go off and try to just, you know, invent something. And then if you're interacting with aliens, they may actually try to introduce something themselves. And it's almost as though, it's like Greer mentions in his book, huge, but very subtle. It's, they want to fade it way down, so that it's, there are many different parts, and then you're not controlling the parts, but you let those other parts just exist, almost like the virtual. They're sort of there in the air, and you just allow them the softer, more subtle tones that you can weave in out of where you are, and you're in the social realities of where you live. That seems to be.
We've got a couple of minutes left. We urge people to go over and read your ebook, and you're adding more to it. EYEPOD.org.
.org, yes. And the book is called Alien Mind.
I've got about a minute and a half here. You want to bring me up to speed on something I've missed?
Let's see. Well, I think that what I was going to say is that I think it's maybe the most important thing a person could do regarding or interacting with aliens is to think about everything that you've seen, observe. Because you may come up with something that no human or no one here has actually come up with yet. And there's another aspect, is that when you've interacted with aliens, you have a kind of an extra perception and an awareness, even in your memory, that you may not be immediately aware of. Those are very important. You can revisit that. It's like you're remotely sort of revisiting or sensing details of what they did, who they are, what they had around them, even at a later date. So it's good to think about, read and look and judge and look for internal consistency, what you see about aliens, but think about it. It's going to challenge your ideas when you come to a point where you see that, aha, that moment in your life, something is definitely going on.
So no doubt in your mind the aliens are here.
In numbers and in diversity.
And how can they keep that a secret?
They can't. They literally can't. I mean, the sightings are so common now. And
do they care whether it's secret or not?
Some do, but I think now that it's out of the bag, it's just now it's a matter of trying to make it as good and, I suppose, as well-rounded and informed.
We've got about 30 seconds. This is a terrible question to ask with only about 30 seconds, but do aliens have gods, a religion, a spiritualism?
You know, different people will have different opinions, and it's sort of...
What's your opinion?
Your idea. I think a good idea of an alien belief would not be, quote, manipulative, masculine God at all. Not a masculine. It's all the mind that is, ever was, or ever will be.
In other words, may the force be with you type thing.
Well, yeah, the possibilities are just astounding. But, yeah, it's something like that. It's more something you're part of. It's not something external. They're a part of it. So it's not an external male.
I have always noticed with some amusement and not understanding, really, the human condition is that we all seem to be want to be part of something. You know, we got to be a part of God, we got to be a part of this, we got to be part of the community, we got to be part of this. I wonder, do the ETs have the same thing? Evidently they do.
Yeah, it's important. Belonging. Without a sense of belonging, people lose all hope. Belonging, love, connectedness. Aliens are the same way in that regard.
Interesting. Thanks very much, George L. We're out of time. And that's iPod.org and the name of the book?
Alien Mind.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.